When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host A. Trunk.
What's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk, and welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, new every Thursday, wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and thank you for listening. And as I tell you every week, everything you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast, as far as the interviews are concerned, originated on my Sirius XM radio show, which is called Trunk Nation, and it's heard live Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific, on Faction Talk, Sirius XM, channel 103, or anytime on the Sirius XM app. Full shows to listen to on demand. So if you can't listen in the live window, you can always pull it up on demand and listen whenever you want. Appreciate you doing so. If you live in the U.S. or Canada, which means you can get Sirius XM and you're only listening to the podcast, you're only getting a fraction of what I do live on the radio every day. Giving you the opportunity, if you're not already on board with me on Sirius XM, to come on board, because you can get 3 months totally free. All you got to do is go to SiriusXM.com/Eddie Trunk, no credit card required, and you can sample either over the air or through the app and hear what goes on every day and sample the full show. Thank you for doing so. Again, SiriusXM.com/Eddie Trunk, no credit card required. Hope you come on board and join me for Trunk Nation every day. So we've got social media out there for you as well to connect at Eddie Trunk, Twitter or X, Facebook page, Instagram. Be sure to follow. And also, if you're listening to this on post day, which is Thursday, the 15th of February, 2024, tomorrow I will be in Norco, California, doing a speaking Q&A show. And that on that one, I'll be joined by Phil X of Bon Jovi. It's at Rockstars of Tomorrow. And again, it's going down tomorrow if you're listening on post day, which would be the 16th of February. And then on the 17th, this coming Saturday, join me at the Gas Lamp, and that's in Long Beach, California, doing a speaking and Q&A show as well. So hope to see you if you are in those areas. What do we have for you this week? We got two interviews. We're going to start with Journey drummer Dean Castronovo. Journey has a huge amount of touring coming up this year, including a co-headline run with Def Leppard once again. Dean also called in to talk about his band Revolution Saints. He's a guy with a lot of energy, a great attitude. He's been through a lot in his life. He's done jail time. We talk about it all in the interview. Great singer, great drummer. Dean Castronovo starts us off. And second this week, Biff Byford, lead singer of the legendary British metal band Saxon. They have a new album out and some U.S. dates coming up, and we talked to Biff about all of that. So we'll start with Dean will go second with Biff. A nice long double dip for you on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. Let's get it started with the voice and drummer. Well, one of the voices, he occasionally does sing lead vocal in the band, and drummer in Journey, Dean Castronovo. Enjoy. How are you, buddy?
I am great, brother. How are you, man?
I'm good. You're staying busy, wearing a lot of hats as usual, right?
Yes, sir, dude. Got to keep busy. I get bored at home, bro. I mean, I love my family and all, but I live on the road, man. This is my home. I'm in Nashville now. We're starting rehearsals in about 3 or 4 days and starting a tour with Toto, and going to be busy all springtime with them and then out with Def Leppard. It's going to be amazing, man. Amazing year.
It's amazing. I mean, I know you've been, you're in Journey now, of course, and you do a great job in that band, your second tour of duty with them, but, yeah. It's got to even amaze you, I would think, Dean, at what Journey has rebuilt into in the last 10 years or so. I mean, it's just crazy how big the songs have become to a whole new generation. You must pick up on a lot of that at the shows, I would think, right?
Oh, dude, yeah. You see generations, you see kids, and then you see, you know, people my age and people older than me as well. You know, I'm going to be 60 this year. So, you know, you've got an entire gamut. You're running the gamut of fans now. And, you know, you still got Don't Stop Believing, still the number one most downloaded song in history, I guess. That's what they say. But, I mean, we're fortunate, dude. We really are. I mean, not a lot of the bands in the 80s have been able to do what we've done. And I think a lot of it is Neil. I mean, he's a workaholic, and he's got a really good sense of what works and what doesn't. And, you know, he's our leader. So, you know, we just follow him.
How long has it been now that you've been back in the band now, this second run with you for Journey? When did you rejoin again?
July 19th of 2021. So been here a couple of years. This is my third year back. So yeah, it's been great, bro. I mean, who in a million years would have thought that I would have been able to come back and be with my bros, you know, and play the music that I grew up with and I love. I mean, I'm very fortunate. I don't take it for granted. Definitely don't.
And you can tell, man, that comes across, because I saw you since you've been back. I saw Journey since you've been back in the band. It was at, in Vegas. It was probably about a year ago, year and a half ago. I saw you briefly. I was sitting with Neil talking for a little bit. But I got to tell you, when you watch the band, and you in particular, you're back there, man, and you are smiling the whole time. You know, you can see it. You can feel it.
Oh, dude, total restoration. I mean, just, you know, getting off the drugs, getting my stuff together and working again and doing what I love. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't get to do what they love to do and make a living doing it. And, oh, yeah, you know, you've had it taken away, you know, because of some stupid decision or choice. And you get that second chance, man. You do nothing to screw that up. And, yeah, it is. It's a perpetual state of gratitude every night, you know, every day. Every morning I wake up, I'm like, okay, number one, I'm alive and I'm breathing. That's a good thing. And then I get to play and do what I love. Oh, yeah, dude, I'll never take it for granted ever again.
Are you okay talking about that at all? Like what you went through? Because I think it's inspirational. It shows that if you can turn your life around, you can, you know, there is hope to get a whole nother lease on life. And you've gotten that more ways than one, career wise. And like you said, with your own health and personal well-being, can you talk about that process? How tough it was for you?
Oh yeah, dude. I mean, it was, you know, I had a domestic dispute with my wife and police were called. I was pretty messed up, man. I was on a 26-day run on drugs. I don't remember a lot of it. I remember being in jail for 15 days, which scared the hell out of me. I mean, that scared me straight. That freaked me out. I'd never been in jail before, so that was pretty heavy. So, yeah, it was like I took 2 years off. I said, I'm not touching any drums. I'm not doing any music. I just need to focus on getting my life together. So, I did that. I'd get offers. I'm like, yeah, I'm not ready. And it was the Dead Daisies, actually, and Serafino as well. You know, doing Revolution saying, let's come back. And then the Dead Daisies, you know, asking me to join. And that was huge. I thank David Louie and David Edwards for that a ton. And Doug Aldrich for bringing me in, you know. So, yeah, it was tough. But you know what? It needed to be done, man. I would have been dead. I mean, honestly, I mean, the amounts of drugs I was, you know, taking in should have killed a rhino, bro. I mean, I was a mess. So I'm grateful today. Every day, you know, and, you know, you get slip ups, you screw up, you come back. But that was the last time for me, man. I was done. I was done. So here I am, man, doing what I love. I mean, it's a blessing. It really is, bro.
And Dean, again, if I'm getting too personal here, I mean, just tell me. I totally get it. But I think this stuff is important to talk about because we got a lot of young musicians and people in bands that do have these struggles. And when I have artists on that tell everybody how they came out the other side, and here you are, you got your great gig back in Journey again. But you were in a bad way for a long time. The drugs that you were doing and the issues that you were having, I mean, what were you doing, and was it always a problem for you in your life, or was it one period in your life where you turned to that and made that mistake?
Well, you know, for me, I was when I joined Bad English, I was clean as a whistle. I wasn't doing anything. I was just a new kid. I was playing, doing what I loved. And it was actually when I got fired from Ozzy that I just took a turn for the worst. I started drinking. And then, of course, when you're drinking, well, why not have some cocaine with that drink? And then the cocaine was burning the crap out of my nose and my vocal cords. And I'm like, oh, why don't I just smoke it? So I started smoking crack. So, you know, it just progressively got worse and worse. And when I joined Journey, you know, there was times when I would stop. That was my worst enemy, man, having, you know, being a partner in the band and making great money and having a lot of time on my hands. And my family went through hell, dude. I mean, trying to get me, you know, straight, the band, you know, trying to get me straight. And, you know, on the road, I'd be perfect. I would bring my A game. I wouldn't touch a thing. It was when I came home that it was on, and it was on hard. And this last one, man, it threw me for a loop. I mean, it woke me up. I had to hit below bottom. Literally, I was below bottom, crawling my way up to bottom. So, yeah, you don't want to go there. I mean, everybody says, oh, don't do drugs. I mean, I'm living proof, man. You'll lose it all. The next step for me, Eddie, would have been death. I mean, I was at death's door. I was 153 pounds. I mean, I was dying, you know, and here I am, you know, 25 pounds heavier, feeling good, you know, got muscle, I'm working out now. So, you know, it's been, you had to change my entire life. I had to turn it around and change my life. And it's not just the drugs, bro. Drugs are a symptom of underlying problems. I had a pretty shitty childhood. Pardon my language. I don't know if I can say that or not.
No, you can curse. It's fine. You can say it.
Okay, yeah, so I had a pretty crappy childhood. You know, it was not easy. Picked on a lot and you know, issues that, you know, I don't want to talk about there. But, yeah, it was pretty rough, dude. So, you know, I was numbing because I didn't like who I was, you know. And at the end there, bro, I didn't even care. I was like, going, look, God, if you just let me take this hit and die, I don't even care because I can't stop. I cannot stop. And I was praying for death bad, for real. Like, just make it not painful, God. Wow. Just take me home, you know. But, yeah, you got that bad, bro. I'm just grateful to be on the other side, you know. And you can do it. You just got to – to work the program, you've got to really have good people around you. You got to get away from the bad people, the people that are yes men and want to party with the drummer for Journey and stuff like that. And this, again, it's been an up and down battle, but here I am today, and I'm grateful, man. I am grateful today. You know
what's interesting about what you said, Dean, is that most artists that I talk to, they say the problems where the demons come into play, if they have those demons, is on the road. You're saying your situation was the opposite. You were good on the road, but when you got home is when you turned to the drugs and the alcohol.
Yeah. I wanted to bring my A game. I wanted to be the best I could be, you know, not just for the fans, but for Neil and the band, you know. It was like family to me. And I always wanted, that was my self-esteem. You know, nobody could take that away from me. They could say, oh yeah, he's ugly or whatever. He's fat or he's, you know, stupid, whatever they could say about me, whatever they did. You know, they couldn't say, well, he's a shitty drummer and he can't sing his way out of a paper bag. They could never take that away from me. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to be the best I can be. But then coming home, it's like, wow, I just made a killing. You know, I'm going to go buy a bunch of cars and party on. And it, you know, my poor wife, I mean, Dee Dee went through hell. You know, the kids went through hell, and the grandkids went through hell, and my mother and father. And you come on the other side and you look at that and just go, God, what a selfish, selfish life. Really selfish life. And it's selfless now. I say, you know, I'm doing what I can to help people, trying to do the right things. I mean, after I'm done with this stuff, I'm going to go into prisons and talk, you know, to people about this, you know, just give my story and say, you know, it doesn't have to be death. You don't have to die. You don't have to be thrown in jail, you know, but it's not easy to get off. You got to have the right people And you got to have that motivation. And me losing my job was a big motivation, dude, and seeing what I did to my family. The wreckage, after you got sober, you see the wreckage, you just go, my God, what did I do? What was I thinking? You know, hindsight's 20/20. And it was horrible to see the pain I caused the band, the legacy, my family mostly, just seeing them, you know, humiliated by my actions. It's I don't ever do that to my kids again, my wife, my family, ever again.
We're going to talk about Revolution Saints here, but in a second. But when you were offered the gig in Journey again after you endured all this and you came out the other side, was that a big conversation with Neil? Did he really need assurances that you were going to be able to hold it together and that you were healthy now?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I alleviated his fears when we did Journey Through Time, and he saw me again, and it was in 2019. And he could tell, okay, he's back. And I, you know, I, of course I have to reassure him. I mean, and that's what I do every night. I reassure him. But when I'm at home, I'm making sure I'm doing the right things and staying in touch with him. You know, usually when I go away, when you don't hear from me, something's wrong. And he knows that. Neil knows me so well. So he's like, hey man, how you doing? He always checks in. John too. John Kane always checks in. Arnell always checks in. Todd, Jason, they're always there, man. And it happened. The funny thing was, though, it happened. My mother had passed away on the 20th at 11:59, and I was just heartbroken. And I was basically up and down all night. And I got a text at like 7 in the morning from Neil saying, bro, we're doing Lollapalooza. We need a second drummer. You know, Nardis having some issues with the songs, learning the songs. I mean, there was just some stuff going on. And I said, of course I will, bro. Just give me a day or two. Mom just passed away last night. Of course, they gave me those 2 days. And I flew out the day I came in, man. It was just tears. I was in tears. Like, what in the world just happened? Mom had something to do with that, I think. But yeah, it was heavy. And coming back, like, again, you know, it's a dream come true. I'm grateful every day. And, you know, I can't say it enough, dude. You don't know what it's like, again, to lose something that major for so many years. And just one day, boom, you just killed the whole fucking thing. It's like,
yeah,
wow,
yeah.
Man.
Did you when your time in Ozzy was brief, if I recall, are you on the Osmosis record? Is that when you were in there?
Yeah, I did the rehearsals and the recording, and I did the South American tour. And Ozzy, just the chemistry wasn't right, I guess, from what Ozzy said. He wasn't feeling it for me, and I got it, you know. But it was hard because I thought, well, I'm done. That's it. You can't get any bigger than Ozzy. I mean, really, you can't at that time. It was right off of No More Tour or No More Tears. So, yeah, it was heavy. And I kind of just went, man, I'm just going to numb. I hate myself. I don't know what I did exactly, but, you know, it was just not good. And, it took me down. I just had my self-esteem just dropped.
And you said that really the thing that set you straight was those 15 days in jail. That, I mean, that is just... I imagine that's going to put anybody, you know, shake a little reality into anybody, I would think.
Oh, dude, for me, like I said, I'd never seen a jail cell. And it scared the hell out of me. I really did. I just have to like, what in the hell? I've still got PTSD issues from that, dude. I mean, I would think,
yeah. did you get messed with in jail? Did the other inmates mess with you?
They put me in protective custody because the day I came out of General Pop, I came out for breakfast, and there was a line of people wanting autographs. I'm like, oh, this is not.
Are you serious?
Yeah, dude.
They knew you were the drummer from Journey?
Yeah. It was kind of, well, I'm in my hometown, and it was a small town, and it was a small jail, and everybody knew who I was, and I was just like, God. So they stuck me in protective custody. So I was in a jail cell 23 hours a day. I came out to take a shower, call my kids, call my wife. And that was my day for 15 days. When I got out, I couldn't wait to get into treatment. I could not wait. And I stayed there for 90 days, dude. I stayed in there for 90 days. I didn't want to leave. I was like, this is safe. Because I didn't want to deal with the public after that, you know, the humiliation of it all. And so I basically, when I got out, man, I dug in and, you know, just stayed with family and went to meetings and did what I had to do, you know, just to get through and not have to really deal with the public of it, you know, the publicity of it. Cause that was worse, I think, than anything. Just hearing about this stuff and hearing what people were saying was like, damn, man, you know, pretty rough. Woke me right the hell up.
Dean, last thing on this, then we'll talk about Revolution Saints. Did you you had said that you went right into jail from what everything you went through, and everything that happened. But then you went into rehab for 90 days. So I'm assuming those 15 days in jail must have been like cold turkey rehab, because you weren't getting anything in jail, right? So that had to be another thing that made it really hard.
Dude, I was sleeping a lot, dude. I was exhausted. I mean, I'd been up, like I said, 26 days. I was out of it, and that was on meth. So, I was just out of my brain. So, yeah, it was a lot of sleeping. And then when, once I got into treatment, it was like, okay, I was ready to work, do whatever it took, all the classes, all the groups, didn't miss stuff, went in there and worked hard, and it became, there's a few of them still that I still are in touch with that are really close friends and always will be. But yeah, dude. And then after I got out of treatment, it was, meetings and meeting new people and changing, my environment. Basically, I had to change, who I was hanging with and the people that I was around. And I have some great friends in town that are, that are still, on my side. So here I am today, bro, living and breathing.
Well, glad, man. Congrats to you. I mean, it's an amazing story, and I'm glad you came out the other side so strong. You ever think about writing a book?
You know what? People have approached me, and I'm like, I can't throw people under the bus. So no, I ain't doing it. I'm not one of those guys, dude. I'm gonna shove this guy in. It's like, what? My life is my personal thing, and my journey through it, no pun intended. I don't mind talking about that. But people want book companies. They want the dirt. Publishers want the dirt. And I'm not going there. I'm not going to trash anyone. Because I've been trashed. You don't know what it feels like to be trashed like I was. It was gnarly, bro. Well deserved. Don't get me wrong. Most of that stuff was deserved. I mean, the shit I pulled was off the hook. But I'm not gonna go back there. And I'm just gonna walk in love. Treat people with love and respect. And usually you get that back.
Yeah, well, good for you, man. So you're here with a new Revolution Saints record, this one called Against the Winds. And I had Joel Hoekstra on the show about a week ago. We talked a little bit about this record then. A new lineup for the band. Previously, the band consisted of you, Jack Blades, and Doug Aldridge. And now for this record, you've got Joel Hoekstra on guitar, Jeff Pilson on bass. Tell me about the change, bringing these guys in and the other guys leaving and putting this record together.
Well, Doug, it was so dug into the Dead Daisies, which was great. And Jack, of course, Night Ranger. And the schedules weren't permitting. And I know we all wanted to play live, but we could never get it together. And Doug was like, I'm just going to focus on Dead Daisies. Jack, of course, Night Ranger. So it was Serafino and Doug. I mean, Doug was the one that recommended Joel to Serafino. And so Joel came in and of course, Jeff, I've known both those guys forever, because I was on the road with Foreigner with Journey and Night Ranger with Journey. And that Night Ranger and Jeff and Foreigner. So we all became really close. So it was kind of a no-brainer. I mean, the chemistry with Doug and Jack and I was undeniable. It really was. And I miss those guys terribly. I love those guys. And their contribution was unbelievable. But these guys stepped right in, man. Big shoes to fill, and they stepped right in, and we kind of went in a different direction, a little heavier direction. Not so poppy, Journey-ish, It came kind of full circle with more of an almost like a Deep Purple Whitesnake vibe, And that's, I love that. So now I'm not trying to sing or having to sing like Steve Perry. I can try and be more like me, and I'm still learning, bro. I'm not a lead singer. I'm a drummer that was kind of thrust upon me, so I'm trying to get my own voice, per se. And you got guys like Jeff Scott Soto, Arnell, that they have their own thing. Johnny Giuelli, a lot of these great singers, they have their own style. I'm just now trying to figure out who the hell I am as a singer. So I'm just, and thank God for Alessandro and Johnny Giuelli for helping me produce, my vocals. Because, I'm kind of clueless. I've been in Journey so long. And I love Steve Perry's voice so much that it's kind of hard not to sound like that. He was my favorite singer. Steve Perry was. Of all time. Then I had Ronnie Dio and Paul Stanley, those two guys, my two of my biggest favorite, influences as well. So, it's kind of nice. I'm trying to find my footing, and God willing, I'll get through it, and people will like it. And if they don't, well, at least I gave it a shot. The front man, a little leery about. I remember I texted Paul Stanley. I said, dude, you know, check this out. Is this all right? And he gave me some great advice. Like, you know what, man? You sing with power. You need a microphone stand or something. Because I feel like Ricky Bobby, dude. I don't know what to do with my hands. I'm not used to swinging sticks. So here these hands like moving around and switching in the sway. And I'm like, that's like me playing drums. So I'm still trying to get my grounding there. Frontman thing scares the hell out of me, bro. Not my thing. It is not.
Well, what's interesting about that is, you know, there's two videos out now from this new Revolution Saints record, Changing My Mind and the title track. And I noticed, it's funny you bringing that up, because in both of the videos, you are just seen singing. You're not behind a kit playing drums at all. So that must have been interesting for you to do it that way. You're not even playing drums in the video. Even though you're on the track, you're not seen in the video behind a kit. You're just seen as the frontman.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. I'm so, it's so out of my element, bro. I like having that fortress around me. If I'm going to sing, at least I'm covered up a little bit. I mean, frontmen are vulnerable. They're right in the front. You know, Arnell does such an amazing job. Jeff Scott Soto, an amazing job. Johnny, you know, all lead singers, man, it takes some moxie to pull that off. Paul Stanley, I mean, the consummate frontman, in my opinion.
Steven Tyler's a guy that was a drummer and came out front just to front the band, but is inherently a drummer, and he's one of the all-time greats at it.
Yeah, and he pulled it off. He's a god. I'm still getting my footing, and I think maybe if I would have done it at a younger age, it would have been, you know, or started out like that and playing drums as well, and, you know, it would have been different. But drums have always been my passion. That's what I do. That's what I love, and that's what I excel in. I mean, I know I can sing well, but I'm a better drummer than I am a singer, in my opinion. So I'll stick to my day job, bro.
Is it, you know, if people have seen you with Journey, you take a few lead vocals where Arnell will step off and you will play drums and sing lead vocals in Journey at the same time. Is that hard to do?
You know,
I mean, we know there's been a lot of singing drummers, we know, but is it difficult for you?
It isn't, dude. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I kind of grew up doing that at a young age. I mean, my first time lead singing was, I was with guys, I was 11 or 12, and I had a couple guys, 23, 24, and they brought me Infinity and said, here, learn these songs and try to sing them because I hadn't hit puberty, man. I could hit those notes. And so that's how I learned, was listening to Perry sing it, but I was playing drums while I was doing it. So it's kind of like drums take an autopilot. I know where I'm supposed to be drumming wise on these songs. And I got to think about, okay, how am I going to, you know, get the air to hit this note, and where do I got to breathe? And it's kind of an art form. It's definitely different than just being a front man, you know, because you got to find those places. You got four limbs going, and then your brain's going in another direction. So the drums literally take autopilot. I know where that's supposed to be, and I just focus on singing.
Yeah, it's always interesting singing drummers and their process and how they go about doing it. You know, the other thing that I was thinking with Revolution Saints is with this lineup now, with Joel in there and Jeff, the one thing that fans always say about these bands, and you know, you referenced a few times Serafino, Alessandro, those are people for the audience that doesn't know, with Frontiers Records, the label that puts a lot of these records out and these projects and things like that out. And one thing that fans always want is live shows. They just don't know, you know, if these bands will ever be able to play live. And I know it's difficult because a lot of these projects, everybody has their main priority band that they can't get away from. But when I think about this, Dean, there's a situation here where with Pilsen, Foreigner has said they're going to end within the next year or so. And with Joel, Whitesnake, you know, he does TSO, but Whitesnake, you know, nobody knows if David ever really wants to go out again. So where I'm going with this is, if you have windows in your Journey schedule within the next year or so, there might be more of an opportunity for you guys to be able to maybe do some live shows, especially with these guys in the band now, given that their respective main acts might be going away. Is that a consideration and something you guys have talked about?
Yeah, we have actually. You know, my loyalty is obviously to Neil, you know, and because we've been together for so damn long, and it's my bread and butter. But yeah, when we got breaks and I've got Neil's blessing on it, hell yeah. I think it'd be great for us. You know, I would love to you know, do some festivals and just get our footing in Europe and stuff like that. You know, I don't know how viable we'd be in America. I don't know, you know. I mean, the Dead Daisies have gone through America a few times, and shows didn't sell as well as we thought. But in Europe, man, it was great. So, you know, I think Europeans, they accept all types of music. There's no cliques. There are cliques, but they'll accept everything. They listen to everything. I remember getting sandwiched between Korn and Slipknot, Journey was, and it was like, I thought we were going to get pummeled. I'd never seen that kind of lineup before, and it worked. It literally worked. I mean, people loved it. And I was like, wow, that's kind of cool. That's what I love about the European audiences. They're very open to every style of music, and that's a beautiful thing. So, yeah, I think we should do stuff in Europe. I definitely would love to do some stuff when we have some time. But I know this year, man, we're gone until November, I think. Journey is. We're out, and we're not coming home. I'm coming home for maybe a little break between the Toto tour and the Def Leppard tour, but we're gone. So, and I don't know what 2025 holds yet. So, you know, but I got, as long as I got Neil and John and Arnell's blessing, I'll do it. You know, I'll definitely do it.
You weren't in Journey when they did the run with Leppard a few years back, right? That was before you returned, right?
No, I did it with them in 2006. It was our first time with Def Leppard, and it was a blast, man. I mean, Rick Allen, what a sweet man. The whole band, just awesome, you know. And we had a great time. And then, you know, they carried it on, you know, with a couple other tours with Def Leppard. So this is my first time back again after, you know, the 2006 run with them. So it's going to be great to see those guys and
it's a whole, and Dean, as I'm sure you know, it's a whole nother thing now, because in 06 it was a whole different story, and the melodic hard rock and things like that were still trying to build back up again. Even Def Leppard was trying to figure it out again. The work they've put in to build to where they are is incredible. The work that Journey's put in to build. I was at I did a big special with Joe Elliott and Neil for that tour a few years ago. And I went to the show actually in Denver, which was at the baseball stadium there. And it's just incredible. You know, having been in this myself 40 plus years, seeing the arc that these bands have taken, and, you know, everybody got the shit knocked out of them coming off of Nirvana and all that. We all know that. But some have been able to rebuild remarkably. And in the case of both Journey and Leppard, that's two bands that have put the work in, and just building, not only reconnected with the old audience, but built a whole new audience. It's amazing to go to see both bands and see what, you know, what they've been able to do. And honestly, just from watching from afar, I mean, it was definitely a lot of hard work and persistently going out there and rebuilding it, really.
Yeah, dude, for sure. And honestly, this music to me is timeless. I mean, and so is Journey's, you know, so musically, I think we're, you know, both bands are viable. I mean, it's pretty relevant still, because there's not a lot of bands that can work like that and consistently sell tickets and consistently go out each year and still do really, really good business. And for us, I mean, the music speaks for itself. I mean, Def Leppard are top notch. They're freaking badasses. And, you know, we definitely hold our own as well. I mean, there's a lot of bands that, you know, that try as best they can to do it, and it's just difficult for them. So I think it's a lot of it has to do with the music and the fans, man. I mean, Journey's fans are ridiculously loyal, really loyal. So, you know, and that you know, shows in the ticket sales. I mean, every night we're selling out, you know, it's pretty dang cool. So, yeah, pretty cool, man. Very, very, very fortunate.
Hey, one more quick thing, and then I'll let you run. You know, when you go back, you mentioned Bad English, which you were a part of, and that first record was pretty big and all of that. But going back even earlier than that, something I didn't know until just before I talked to you and I was looking some stuff up online, is that you were the drummer on the Cacophony record with Marty Friedman and Jason Becker.
Yeah, dude, I did Marty Friedman's solo record, Dragon's Kiss, which was unbelievable. I mean, I really got to open up on that record, and as well as Cacophony, and that was Mike Varney, you know, right. Mike really, he found me, kind of discovered me through Wild Dogs, which was a shrapnel band as well. And with Jeff Mark on guitar, cause Jeff was one of the shredder guys. And he took me, Mike said, took me and I remember getting married and went on my honeymoon. And the day after my honeymoon, I drove down by myself and started playing with Tony McAlpine in his band. And that's when Neil discovered me. So yeah, I was playing all that heavier stuff way, way, way before that. And I can remember Herbie Herbert saying, "How are you going to get a metal drummer to play pop music? It'll never work." And he was right. I didn't know what to do, dude. I'm like, I play busy. I do all these licks, and I had to learn. And thank God for Neil and John, mostly Neil though, because, you know, he saw the potential and he taught me to play for the song. You know, I learned to play really in Bad English and Journey playing rock and pop, you know, and playing for the song and not just ripping it to shreds every night. Because that's what metal was. It was all about whoever got to the end of the song first won. So, you know, it was just blazing. So I learned a lot, you know. I learned a ton. And I thank Mike Marty for that as well.
Yeah, you know, I know Mike, and you know, I live part time in Vegas. I have a home there now, and Mike has lived there for a while. I had Mike on this show not too long ago because he's been tied to so many things over the decades, and great guy, and his history is just incredible. But I'm not familiar with Wild Dogs. That was an early band that you had that he put out.
Yeah, it was a shrapnel band. I think that was my first record I ever done. I was 16. And they were, it was like we sounded a lot like Judas Priest and Motorhead. We were that kind of a band. It was really killer. But Jeff was this ripping guitarist. He was a lot like Eddie Van Halen and Randy Rhoads. He had that, you know, the picking finger thing down, and he was just wailing. And that's where Mike discovered him, was on the U.S. Metal Records. Heard The Tonight Show, which was Jamie St. James playing drums from Black and Blue. So that was his first band. You know, he was, I mean, one of the bands that he was in. And Mike found them, and they did Born to Rock on that record, and The Tonight Show, which was, that's when I joined. And we started doing shows up and down the Pacific Northwest coast. You know, we did San Francisco, LA, Seattle, Portland. We would just go up and down the coast. And that's when Mike discovered me. He said, hey, why don't you come and do some records, you know, for these guitar shredders? And that's how I got my start. And then I met Neil. That was it.
Ah, amazing. Yeah. You should write a book, man. You don't have to dish dirt. You could just tell your story. It's incredible. It's awesome. And, you know, I'm glad you came out the other side and we're still talking. You're healthy and happy, man. That's most important.
Eddie, thank you, man. And thank you, bro, for, you know, for helping bands like us still stay alive, dude. You know, because we don't get airplay. We don't, you know, nobody recognizes this stuff. And you do, bro, because you're, you know, you're one of the soldiers of it. And thank you, bro. Thank you big time.
Well, you're welcome, man. You're welcome. It's always good to talk to you, Dean. Stay healthy. And it sounds like you're doing great. And I'm really psyched for all the dates you have coming up this year. Hopefully I'll catch you out there at some of the shows. And again, everybody check out the new album, fronted by Dean Castronovo on drums and lead vocals. If you love melodic hard rock, you will love Revolution Saints and this new lineup. Now featuring
also Eddie, Neil wants to talk to you too. He told me to tell you that to call him because he'll do interviews with you as well.
Oh yeah, I love Neil, and Neil's always welcome to come on, and we're in touch. So absolutely, we'll do something before the tour. Tell him I'll reach out to him before you guys get out there on the road. We'll make it happen.
Awesome, brother. Sounds good, Ed. Thank you again, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Okay. All right. Take care, Dean.
Bye bye. Okay,
well, that's a guy that's been through a lot. It was great to get some insights on that from him. That, of course, is Dean Castronovo of Journey and Revolution Saints. That album is out there right now.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Give you a second interview this week, give you a little extra time. How about we do Biff Byford? Biff called into my show a couple weeks ago from England, where he lives, and joined me to talk about the new Saxon record and their coming U.S. tour. Here's Biff. Biff, how are you, buddy?
Hey, it's good to be there. You all right, Eddie?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good. I know you got this great new record out that I wanted to touch base with you on and talk a little bit about, Hellfire and Damnation. I don't know how you guys do it, man. You get older, but you still maintain all that energy and all that great classic metal. It's, you show no signs of slowing down, man. What do you attribute that to?
Yeah, we're like champagne, mate. You open the bottle and off we go. it's been good writing this album. You know, the last album came out of the pandemic. This one, we got Brian Tatler in from Diamondhead, so he wrote a couple of songs with me. So, yeah, I mean, dynamically, it's, you know, it's been really good, this album. We had a great load of fun making it, and it's really powerful, you know. People love it.
You know, speaking of the lineup, you are the sole original member of Saxon. Do you, when you look back on the history of the band, which is like, you know, 45 years or so now, I would think, at this point, do you when you see all the lineup changes, the people who have come and gone, do you think that in some way has reinvigorated the band over the years, or do you, would you have preferred if the lineup stayed more consistent the entire time?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, things changed. I mean, the first change was 1986. The second change was 1994. So we've been pretty stable till then. You know, our long-term friend Paul, you know, retired sort of last year from touring and didn't want to play sort of, you know, heavy metal anymore. He wanted to play blues music and chill a bit. So you got to go with people's decisions. But no, I think where we've been, you know, over the last years, we've been in a good place for the last 10, 15 years. So I think it's all pretty much working out really great, you know.
When he decided to leave, Paul Quinn, did you try to talk him out of it, or were you kind of cool with it and said, you know, you got to do what you got to do?
Well, he's talked about it before, so I've talked him out of it a few times before, but this time he was really adamant, and we said, look, fair enough, you know, you can stay in the band, you can, you know, do some stuff for the album, but as far as touring, he doesn't want to tour anymore, he doesn't want to, you know, take the long flights and sweat and, you know, groove around stage and just generally getting fed up with the whole thing, so he wanted to retire and do his blues thing. So we said, yeah, fair enough, that's cool, we're still friends, and you know, if you want to jump up on stage with us anytime, then that's cool.
Did he contribute to the new album, Biff, in any way?
Well, he played a couple of solos. He didn't contribute to the writing, because it just didn't work out. You know, we weren't with him. We were on tour with doing festivals in Europe with Brian, and that's when we wrote and recorded the bulk of the album. So it just didn't work out. But he did do a couple of songs. Yeah, he played guitar on a couple of songs.
When you talk about the grind of touring, and look, I hear this, and I talk to artists every day, and they all land in a different place on it. But most artists who have been doing it 40, 50 years, there is a fatigue that sets in, and they'll tell you all the same thing. The hour and a half on stage, that's what they live for, but the other 22 and a half hours is what they dread. And it is like with Paul Quinn and others, it is the reason most of them cite for getting out of touring. But you're the front guy in the band. You're the singer in the band. I mean, that takes a lot on you as well. Everyone's getting older. Where do you land on that? How do you feel? Do you still enjoy the touring and the travel?
Yeah, I think it's great touring. I mean, you know, you make an album like this one, you know, I Hope I'm Damned. It's a great album, a bit magical album, this one, because, you know, Brian's involved with it. So, yeah, we've got to go on the road and promote it. That's our juice. That's our lifeblood. Write a new album, go on tour with it. So, yeah, I'm pretty good. I mean, the traveling, you know, it's not so bad once you land in the country. It's the flights that are pretty long, you know what I mean? And you're sort of, you know, sitting in a little seat there for like 10, 15 hours. But it soon wears off, you know. I mean, jet lag can be quite sort of exhausting. But, you know, you have to remember once you're in the schedule and you're touring and, you know, everything's pretty cool. Everybody loves you being there. The fans are great. You know, they've traveled a long way, paid a lot of money to see you play live. So it's all part of the vibe and all part of the juice, really.
And what about as far as being the singer and the front man of the group? I mean, vocally, do you feel that you're, I mean, judging from the record, your performance on the record sounds great. I've seen you live not that long ago. You still sound great. There's a lot of guys, as you know, Biff, when they get up around, you know, the age you're at, give or take a few years, those cracks start to show. They seem to struggle. They don't, you know, vocally, it's not what it once was. How have you been able to maintain? What's your regimen on that? And how do you feel? Do you feel differently? And do you have a different warm up or warm down? Or do you even do that to prep your voice?
No, I just sing. I'm very lucky, you know. I mean, there's a few singers, you know. I mean, Ronnie Dio was the same, you know. We just get up and sing, you know. We don't really do any exercises. I mean, if we get the sore throat, then, you know, we have to sort of decide whether to do the show or cancel the show. That's the biggest decisions you have as a singer, because it's not like guitar strings, it's flesh and blood. So, but you know, you're monitoring it all the time, and you're sort of keeping an eye on your throat. But I don't do any exercising or special treatments to it. You know, I just sing really, and that's how I live my life really. Just do it.
It's amazing to me, because I've asked that question for decades to so many different singers, and it's amazing, Biff, because they all have a different answer. I know guys that will tell you that there's a 2-hour warm up, there's a 2-hour warm down. They scream into towels.
I've heard them in the dressing rooms on festivals. It's all right if they want to do that. You know, if that works for them, that sort of, you know, gets their voice warmed up. But pretty much with me, first song is my warm up, and I go for it.
Yeah, and you're right about Ronnie, because I was very close with Ronnie, and there were many times I would sit in the dressing room, and I'll never forget one time I said to him, it was about an hour to show till showtime, and I said, hey, let me let you go and get ready and get warmed up. And he said, what do you mean warmed up? And I said, well, whatever you got to do to go. He was with doing Sabbath at the time. I said, well, just so you can get ready, you know, I'm sure you got some. He goes, no. And he just walked out and sang Neon Nights, and that was it. I was like, okay. And he's one of the great singers of all time. So it's just everybody's got their process of what works for them.
If you need to warm your voice up, then that's fine. You know, it's an instrument when all said and done, but I've never really bothered, you know, with that, all that. I don't really get too paranoid about my voice. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's in the lap of the gods, really. But, you know, I mean, I have a really powerful voice. It's still powerful. So I just, we'll just do the shows while it's working, don't fix it. That's what I'll say, you know.
Who were the guys, you know, and I know maybe some of this, because you've done 2 albums of covers, including one last year. You did the second record of cover tunes. Mm. So maybe some of the answer is in this, but who were your guys, Biff, as far as vocal influences, guys that you heard coming up that really had a big imprint on you as far as singers?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at the second Inspirations album, we did an Animals cover. You know, the reason we did that is because as a bass player at that time, you know, in the 60s, I was learning to play bass guitar, and the Animals were the first record I heard which started with bass guitar. But Eric Burdon had a fantastic voice, and, you know, I used to listen to his voice and think, wow, that's got so much character in that voice, you know, what is he doing there? So, you know, those early albums, you know, from the 60s, there's some great singers in that time, you know. You've got like Reed Davis and Mick Jagger, all those great sort of, you know. Eric Burdon was probably one of the best white soul singers in the 60s, I would think.
Mm. And for people who haven't checked out, Inspirations 2 came out last year, and some great covers on there done by Saxon. It's the sequel to the first one, so that was real good as well. You touched on Brian Tatler, who is the newest arrival in Saxon on guitar. And for people that don't know, Brian comes from the band Diamond Head, which is a band that didn't quite make it here in America, except they're best known because Metallica covered some of their songs, of course. But tell me about the decision to bring him into the band. Did you have a long history with him? Did you go through an audition process? Or when Paul was leaving, he was just the natural guy?
Yeah, basically, we only had one choice. We wanted somebody from the 80s, you know. There's nothing wrong with a young guitarist, but we didn't want a young guy to come in the band and, you know, start shredding everywhere and sort of changing the dynamic of the band too much. So we asked Brian if he'd do the festivals with us, and he was like, yeah, you know, immediately said yes. And, you know, the fans loved him, actually. We were quite surprised. You know, he's a bit of a legend, Brian, you know, with the Metallica, especially with the Metallica. You know, they did 4 of his songs, you know, in the early days. And, I mean, he's got a lot to say, Brian. He wants to write songs, and he wrote the title track, Hellfire Damnation, with me. He wrote Madame Guillotine off the new album. So, you know, he's in the band big time now. He's part of the writing team. So, it was the first choice, you know. I mean, we did ask Phil Campbell, ex-Motorhead guy, but he was too busy with his sons playing. So, but Brian was the first choice, and he's done great. You know, we did all the festivals with him, tours of South America last year, and, yeah, the fans love him, really.
Did Saxon and Diamond Head, I mean, I talked to the audience a little bit before you came on the air with me. We were talking about the legendary new wave of British heavy metal in the early 80s, where all of these bands, Saxon included, kind of broke out of. Some did better than others, of course. But did Saxon and Diamond Head do a lot together back in the early days?
No, we didn't do a lot together. The different management, different record company. We did play together. I think we played one of the old, one of the early Monsters of Rock festivals in England back in the day, about 82, 83 maybe. But we didn't really play together much. We knew each other. You know, we'd talk in the dressing room and the catering areas, and we'd meet each other on the motorway services, you know. But we didn't really tour together much. But we knew them, and they knew us, obviously. But the thing is, they missed the boat a little bit, Diamond Head. They didn't get signed till 1982. By the time it was 1982, I mean, Maiden, Saxon, Def Leppard, Motorhead, Police were all, like, pretty much happening by then. So, unfortunately, they missed the show. So I think a lot of people know Brian and Diamond Head from the Metallica connection. I mean, Brian did tell me that the first show Metallica did, as you know, was with the Whiskey A Go-Go with Saxon back in 1982. He told me they played four Diamond Head songs at that show, which is really weird.
So the bill was Saxon, Metallica.
Yeah.
That was the bill at the Whiskey with you guys headlining?
It was, yeah, they were headlining. I think it was only Metallica's second show.
Did you watch them, or were you not there when they played?
Watching them, yeah, from the top of the stairs, you know. Yeah, they were pretty good. You know, it's a young new band, really, from America, you know. The second night, we had a Rat supporting us, so it was a bit of a crazy time, you know.
But when you saw Metallica, because I saw Metallica very early on, too. I saw them when Mustaine was in the band, and I was actually one of the first people to actually play Metallica on the radio, because the first record came out the first year I started in radio. And I tell people all the time, you know, I grew up listening to Kiss and Van Halen and all this stuff. And people are always like, oh my gosh, you were there in the early days of Metallica. Did you like say you knew you were hearing something that was going to be huge? And I'm being honest. I was like, no, I didn't know what I was hearing, because to me, it was very extreme and fast. I didn't know what to make of it. What did you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's the fans really, you know, that more and more and more and more people hear it on radio and buy the record, and then it builds and builds. I mean, Brown told a great story that I didn't know, that Lars went to England to see Saxon and Diamond Head, and he didn't have anywhere to stay, and Brian put him up on his sofa in the front room. So, you know, I didn't know that story. That's a new story that I've just heard. But that's pretty crazy, you know, Lars sleeping in Brian's living room.
Yeah, no doubt.
Just
were there
to show how nice Brian is, you know, giving some young dude from America a bed on his sofa, you know.
Right, and now he's reaping the rewards of Metallica covering those Diamond Head songs. Probably the publishing on that's probably making him more money than he ever made in all his years of playing in a band, I'm sure.
Right, he doesn't really talk about that, but I'm sure, you know, we keep hinting at the fact that he must be pretty well off. But the thing is with Brian, it's all about music, you know. He just loves being in Saxon, because we can tour the world on a higher level and he gets to play his songs. I mean, you know, we'll just see, you know. The new album's selling really well. You know, hopefully it'll sell more in America. We can get some new fans involved with the band and join the family. That would be great.
Yeah, well, that's what it's about, still turning new people on to what you're doing. And the thing about what Saxon is doing, and I can honestly say this, having heard the new record, is it is on par with the classic records, you know, whether it's Denim and Leather or whatever record you may have grown up with, Strong Arm of the Law, whatever it is. This, to me, what I'm hearing is very much on par with that. A lot of the bands that have been around as long as you guys have, like I said at the top of the interview, the energy, the power's not there, but clearly that has not left you guys after all these decades. And, you know, I think it's remarkable, whether it's you know, the new blood coming in or the old blood that's been there or the mix of the two. I don't know how it works, but it's great that it's still working.
It's just wanting to write great songs and release a great album, because it's like Lemmy said, everybody's waiting for you to fall as you get older. So, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, just give it everything 100%. And, you know, we've created a monster with this album, and, you know, I hope it lives on. It'd be great.
Who produced it, Biff?
Me and Andy Sneap produced it, so together, yeah. So, you know, he was flipping backwards and forwards to Judas Priest on their new album. So we did the albums together, really. Us and Priest, or you know, we're both released albums this year. I mean, theirs comes out in March. So yeah, right. It's the, you know, we're touring together with Priest and Uriah Heep in March, and then we bring the tour to America. But yeah, it's a battle of the albums. Going to be great.
Yeah, and what I've heard of the Priest record, the three songs they put out so far sound outstanding as well. So that's a band that's toyed with retirement now for like 10, 15 years. But they've, to my ears, they've got a really powerful, great new record coming. The last one was real good as well. So, and they've been at it longer than you guys have.
Yeah, yeah. It's not quite as good as ours already, but...
Yeah, well, that, yes, as a guy promoting a new record, that's what you should say, Biff.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the tour, the dates you're doing,
yeah,
the dates you're doing,
I heard it. It's a great album.
The dates you're doing with Priest, those are only in Europe, right? That's not here in America, is it?
Yeah, they're only in Europe. I think they cancelled some shows, didn't they? Was it last year or the year before? And Sabaton were supporting them, so I think they're touring with Sabaton because I think they owed him some shows. But no, we're going out with Uriah Heep, so it's sort of half of that package. But we're looking forward to it. You know, we haven't been to America since before the pandemic. I mean, the last time we toured America was with Judas Priest, I think. So yeah, we're looking forward to it. I think we've got many more fans now there from the touring we've done. So yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, the dates here in the U.S., where, of course, you know, people are listening to this, are Saxon and Uriah Heep as the special guest. That's also, you know, Uriah Heep's an interesting story, too, because here in America, you know, way back in the day, maybe a moment, but they're not an extraordinarily well-known band here. So in a lot of ways, they're a band that is actually, I think, trying to kind of, even after all these decades, like you just said, bring some new people to the table.
Yeah, definitely, man. You're right. You've been going, I think, when's that first album? Was it 69 or something? Or
yeah.
70? It was very early. That very, very heavy and very humble. That was a big influence on the guys in Saxon. That I love those early albums. I love Uriah Heep anyway, but those early albums were like absolute metal albums. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be great. It's a different generation of fans maybe in Europe, but in America, yeah, it'd be great. I mean, it's a great legacy of music, isn't it? All that time, people, it's definitely a great package. People should check it out.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool that they're coming over, because my point was that way, way back in the day, they had a little bit of a hit in America with Easy Living, but that was about it. But I know they're much, much more highly regarded in Europe and other parts of the world. And actually, I just saw a documentary on Lee Kerslake, which was fantastic, that's out there right now. I had a chance to meet Lee just before he passed away, and wonderful, wonderful guy. He was a big part of that band's history. So maybe there's some, hopefully some increased interest in seeing them in America, and them coming over with you guys should be a great package.
Yeah, it's a good package. People can see that legacy of music. And, you know, I was a big Byron fan. You know, he was a great singer. Obviously, he died as well, but quite early. But I thought old Uriah Heep, you know, that quite sort of symphonic harmonies they used to have, a little bit like Queen, but heavy metal, was fantastic, really unique at the time. I loved it.
Yeah. Hey, one last thing, and I'll let you go. On the new album, again, the new Saxon album is out now. It's called Hellfire and Damnation. I got to tell you, the video for that song is killer. It's one of the more, you know, most of the videos you see aren't quite that elaborate these days. It looks like you guys really put a lot into that with the images and the graphics and all of that and the way it's shot. Tell me about that video.
Hellfire Damnation, you mean? Or do you mean Roswell?
Hellfire Damnation. Well, both, but Hellfire is the one I was talking about.
Yeah, we shot that in an old... in an old cathedral, you know, an old, big old church that's been decommissioned, and they do concerts in there now. So we shot the film there, and, it's great, all that sort of... I mean, the song's about the fight between good and evil, basically, from the prophecy. Obviously, we've got Brian Blessed, the actor, doing the beginning. But it's based on good and evil, and, you know, I hear a lot of fucking... Oh, sorry, swearing.
No, you can say that. It's okay.
I hear a lot of bands, you know, singing songs about devils and demons and, you know, all this. I just thought it'd be nice to do a song about the good and evil. But, yeah, it just worked out really well. And we shot it in a religious setting, you know, in an old cathedral. Lots of fire, lots of flames. I really liked the way the video turned out. Yeah, it's really good.
And what about, and you wanted to say, and what about Roswell?
Roswell, well, Roswell... you know, I'm a Roswell believer. You know, I think something happened in Roswell, and we got the people that did the video generated these images of UFOs, and they sort of made the images. They sort of I don't know how they did it, but they looked really authentic. You know, when I saw the video, I was like, you know, the first. The first edits, we were like, whoa, that looks really cool. You know, so, yeah, it's great.
Do you, when you say you're a believer in what happened in Roswell, so have you personally seen a UFO?
I think we saw one in San Diego in 1982, I think. There was something hovering over one of the buildings in the bright light. I mean, I couldn't swear to it, but I've always been interested in that sort of thing, you know, is there, isn't there? It's a great story. I mean, I'm not fanatical about it, but I do actually think there was something in Roswell, actually.
Well, you know, I don't know how closely you followed it, but here in the U.S., there's actually been these Senate hearings and stuff where they've actually had people on the record.
After we wrote the song, I was like, whoa, that's really strange. You know, here I am writing a song about Roswell, and there they are talking about Roswell. I mean, all that Area 51 group from Roswell. I mean, Roswell is ground zero, isn't it, for UFO hunters and enthusiasts. Really only started from Roswell, really. So, yeah, it's a great subject. It's interesting. And, you know, why not? There's something in Roswell. I'm a believer.
Yeah, I have a second home in Las Vegas, and that's where I am right now talking to you. I've never been to Area 51, but it's definitely a big, you know, an interesting tourist sort of thing around this area. But I'm amazed that how little coverage these Senate hearings got, because there was one point where the guy speaking on the record under oath said that they basically admitted that they had a body of a life form that was not human. Like, that should kind of be on the front page of the paper.
You'd think that somebody would notice that, wouldn't you? I mean, somebody else told me that, and I was thinking, well, there you go then. There's another conspiracy theory straight away. You know, why didn't the press report on that? Because actually, if they've got an alien body, that's absolutely front page news around the planet, isn't it, really?
Right, you'd think.
You know,
I mean, this wasn't some guy like they found on the side of the street. This was like a guy in the Senate or something under oath testifying. I was like, wait a minute, how is that getting brushed under the rug?
Yeah, and it was sort of like, you know, and it definitely wasn't humanoid. Like,
right.
What did he just say? And then they just like, nobody asked him any more questions. They're just like, oh, okay.
Next, yeah. You know. I mean, I'm not overly into it either, but I have always believed that I think it would be, selfish or ridiculous to think that we're the only life forms in the universe. But my biggest interest in UFO up to that point had been The Band, which is one of my favorite bands in the world.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it would be good if they were all aliens, wouldn't it? But yeah. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Once you open that can of worms, you know, it's like, I mean, I just wrote this song because I just thought that's a great story, you know, the Roswell crash, 1947. Was it a weather balloon? Was it not a weather balloon? Or, you know, they've got these bits of metal, photographed these bits of metal with, you know, mathematical symbols on and things, and then suddenly it's a weather balloon and nobody talks about it anymore, and... You've got all these people like, looking into it and going down there. It's crazy, really. So it's interesting to sing about. And, I think they did a survey, didn't they? I read in one of the magazine. They did a survey in America. They did a survey of 5,000 people, and they asked them three or four different questions. But one of them was, do you think there was anything in Roswell? Do you think it was an alien that crashed? And I think it was like 85% said, yeah. So, you know, that's what it is. You know, people are interested. They're more interested in why they're not being told the truth, I think. That's the thing with conspiracy theories. Why, you know, some guy at a Senate hearing says, yeah, we've got an alien body. Why isn't anybody reacting to that? Crazy.
Right. You'd think that would be pretty front and center. Yeah, for sure.
Watching, okay, what time's lunch, you know?
Exactly.
So, listen. The song hits a point, really. Yeah.
Right.
Was there anything in Roswell or wasn't there? And if there was something in Roswell, has there been something all these years since Roswell? We just don't know, do we?
No, we don't. Well, listen, man, it's always great to spend some time talking with you. Congratulations on the record. Again, it's out now, the new album from Saxon, Hell, Fire, and Damnation, sounding incredible. Brian Tatler of Diamondhead, the newest member of the band, coming in on guitar, bringing a lot to the table as well. And Saxon is playing here in America. Pretty extensive run of dates. Uriah Heep opening, so be sure to look at your local listings wherever you're listening and go see one of the truly great British metal bands, Saxon, coming back to the U.S. very, very soon. Biff, we'll see you when you get to the States. Safe travels, and great to talk to you as always. Congrats on the record.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for playing the record, and a big hello to everybody over there. And check out the new album. We're coming in April, so, yeah, it's going to be great.
Talk to you soon, Biff. Thanks.
Yeah, talk to you soon, Eddie. Thank you very much, mate.
Bye-bye. Well, that guy is certainly a rock and roll warrior. He's been at it for about 45 years now. The sole original member remaining from the band Saxon, lead singer Biff Byford. New studio album out, real good. Concert dates are coming. Thanks to him for joining me. And thanks earlier in the podcast to Dean Castronovo of Journey for joining me. Be sure to listen every day. Sirius XM Faction Talk 103. Everything you hear on the podcast came from there. Join me 3 to 5 Eastern Time live on 103 or listen to full shows anytime you want on the SiriusXM app. EddieTrunk.com is the website, at EddieTrunk on social media. And again, I hope to see you this Friday in Norco, California at Rockstars of Tomorrow. We'll get started at 6 p.m. there. And this coming Saturday at the Gas Lamp in Long Beach, California, we'll get started at around 7 p.m. there for my next speaking Q&A shows. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Hope to catch you on the radio or back here next Thursday for another episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.